good morning, Redemption Church. It's so good to be with you this morning. I'm ready to go. That's perfect. Now, I don't know about you all, but I'll tell you what, man. We had a great holiday as a family, but I realized after days and weeks of continued drive, you reach this state where you're a little bit like holiday hangover-ish, you know? It's just like your body's a little spent, your brain's a little spent. I put on my belt this morning. I realized that I'm hanging over in a lot of ways. And I'm like, okay, man, we're going to have a little bit of a slowdown today. But a slowdown that I think is a great reminder in light of everything we've just traveled through and this idea of being truly thankful. Like, that's what I wanted to really kind of focus on today as we've kind of gone through the gambit of all sorts of emotion and stuff and all of the exercising of the holiday season. And so I thought it'd be good for us to just use this day to kind of breathe a little bit, slow down, and be reminded of the attitude of gratitude, right? The power of positive thinking, or to think thankful, right? That's gonna be the essence of the day. And as I get underway, I actually wanna talk about something that I'm thankful for, not just a something, but a someone, a some family, if you will. I'm gonna bring up this picture right now. This is Sterling Monroe, Michelle, his wife, his beautiful kids, everything else. And I'm incredibly thankful for the Monroe family. They have been a part of Redemption since day one, since before day one. They've been in the valley forever. Duval kids that grew up to be a Duval adults, that grew up to have Duval babies. I mean, the whole thing, right? It's fantastic. And Sterling has been one of our elders for nearly a decade. So to put that in perspective, his son Tommy there was one, right? When Sterling became an elder. And if you're not familiar with what an elder is in our church, it's a unique kind of leader that's to care, to teach, to protect our church and everything else. And so he has been faithfully in that role for a long time. But as the kids get older and life's demands increase and everything else, he kind of came to us recently and says, you know what, I think it's time for me to take a break and just kind of step away and go into this next phase of life as a parent, father, worker, everything else, and not being in that elder capacity. I'm like, dude, that's awesome. I totally get it. We've had other elders in our past that have done the same thing. And so Sterling and family, of course, are still at Redemption Church. They're still serving in ministry. They're a huge encouragement to all of us. But here's what I'm going to encourage you to do as he's kind of taking this break away is if you know him, go and thank him for all of his years of serving here at Redemption Church. And if you don't know him or his family, get to know them. They are fantastic people. And so, again, we are just privileged for all the ways that they have really invested into us, all the ways they're going to continue investing into us. And so just a great blessing all the way around. And so as I was thinking about thankful, I wanted to just say personally how thankful I am for their service, especially over the years, man. I think about this last year. This time last year was a very hard time where we just didn't even know what our future looked like, and the year had all sorts of challenges. And yet what I realized is if I'm always waiting for things to be perfect, to be thankful, I may never be thankful. And therefore, maybe thankfulness has a deeper thing that I should lean into, that we can all lean into. And so it's just seeing those blessings that God gives. This is certainly one of the blessings we've had as a church. And so, again, if you know him, thank him. If you don't, get to know him. He's fantastic. So with that said, right now I'm going to remind you that we have an app, and in the app there are notes that you can follow along with. We kind of suspended that for the Advent season, so you just kind of absorb the different Sundays of Advent. But we're back into the saddle of that, and so if you want to use that today, that'd be awesome. Other than that, I'm going to go ahead and pray, and we're just going to get right to business. All right, Jesus, I thank you so much for your goodness and your grace. I thank you that you call me to thank you and to be thankful for the things that you bring into life. And I pray today as we are reminded of this beautiful gift that you have given us, this beautiful reminder that we are to engage in, that we be faithful to doing that, because we know and in that there is refreshing and there is blessing and there is freedom in life. And so we thank you for your goodness and your grace. We thank you that you care for us so deeply. And so we give you this morning to just fill us up and work in us as we then live for you. And so we thank you, Jesus, in your good and perfect name. Amen. All right, so thankfulness or thanking. At this time of year, there is a lot of speak about that. And as I was thinking about it, though, even as a kid, from our youngest years, we are reminded of the importance of this. Right, as a little one, right? Even I see it now with my daughter and her kids and everything else, where there's the reminder of telling the kids, always say please and thank you. Like, it's a common thing, right? You just do it that way. Or you're reminded maybe when you're a kid, like when you're not so happy and you're complaining about dinner or whatever it is, that mom says, hey, you need to always be thankful because you don't know what conditions could be like. Or I remember even as a kid when I would get some epic cool gift from my grandmother and my parents would say, now you need to write your grandma a thank you letter, which nobody does that anymore, right? Like, at best, you might tell your kids, you might drop your grandma a TikTok, you know, tell her she's slay, whatever, you know, whatever the lingo is for the kids, right? Like, do that kind of thing. But there's always those reminders of, hey, we need to make sure in life that we are engaging in the art of thankfulness, being thankful, thank-filled, thanking, whatever it is. But as I was thinking about this, I thought, man, you know what's strange about this idea of thanking is I was like, we talk about it a lot, but do we really understand it? Right? Like, if somebody came to you and said, I want you to explain to a four-year-old what thankful is, could we do a masterful job of communicating that to a child? Like, we'd probably kind of scramble a little bit. Like, it's to be thinky, thinkish, filled with, spilling with this thinking, thinky thing, and maybe we wouldn't do a great job of being able to articulate, what does this word really capture? What is the essence and the road to experiencing this really all about? And so I want to start with that in your notes, right? If you're taking notes this morning, I want to start with this idea of what does thankful actually mean? Now, for me, I decided, hey, man, I'm going to go right to the source of how we figure out what words mean to us. I'm going to go to a dictionary. So I first went to the Merriam-Webster's dictionary, and it said thankful means to be conscious of benefit received. Conscious of benefit received. But if you're here on Christmas Eve, I mentioned that the Oxford Dictionary is now our official dictionary as a church because we have a UK elder. And so that dictionary says thankful is to be pleased about something good that has happened or something bad that has not happened. So I look at those two definitions, and basically the most sophisticated word I can come up with is blah, all right? Like, honestly, I look at that and I go, like, when I read the Bible and I see thankfulness in the Bible, it has like this almost mystical superpower attached to it that could unlock the chains of life, that could push away the gray clouds and the darkness of things, has a super incredible potential. And then I read these definitions and it sounds like something I would get like an email from my healthcare provider that says, hey, we're gonna cover your wellness visit, you know? Like just not in comparison. Like, oh, okay, well now nothing bad happened, something good happened, and from that, okay, I have the conscious benefit received. All right, big deal. And so from that, I'm like, man, that just doesn't do it. I want to take a little time to try to dig into getting a grip on gratitude, right? And what it means to truly engage in this thing called thankful. And here's why. You may not realize this, but there's all sorts of commands in the Bible. That you know. What you may not know is of the top tier commands, this is a top tier command. So it doesn't come up like 100 times or 200 times or 300 times or 400 times or 500 times or 600 times. It's well over that. The amount of times in the Bible that we are instructed to engage in this idea. It might be praising, it might be thanking, it might be rejoicing, all the synonyms, right? Having appreciation, being satisfied with things, whatever it is. The Bible makes a big deal about this. And so in that sense, I'm like, man, if I care about the things that God most cares about, and what God most cares about me is me engaging in this thing, then I should want to understand this thing. I should want to make sure that I am going out of my way to grapple with it and then to apply it and to demonstrate it in my life. And so that's why I wanted to dig into this a little bit. But I think to do that, you have to understand also that thankfulness is like an ogre or an onion. It has layers, right? It has layers, and you want to peel away the layers. And so the first layer I want to peel away is just what this word is about when you look at the New Testament, right? There's the Hebrew Old Testament, talks about it a lot as well. I'm going to kind of put us in the New Testament because it's a little simpler. But when you go into the New Testament, the original language that the New Testament was penned in is called Koine Greek. And this was like street-level Greek, right? You had like classical Greek for the educated and the sophisticated. But the New Testament wrote like boots-on-the-ground style. And the boots on the ground style used a word for thankful, which is the word charis. Charis is the word. Here's what's cool about that word. If you were to be reading it in Greek, you would realize it gets used two different ways. Sometimes it's translated thank or thankful. The other time it's translated as grace. So the word grace and the word thanks or thankfulness, they're interconnected. And I think this is really, really helpful in my thinking because I go, okay, therefore, to understand grace is to understand thanks, and to engage in thanks is to really then celebrate the power of grace. In fact, charis means this, that which is bestowed or occasions pleasure, delight, or causes favorable regard, but it also refers to the relationship between the giver and the recipient of gifts. And so I think that's incredibly helpful to me. That I realize that part of what I'm doing when I'm trying to figure out how do I engage in my thankful spirit and my thankful disposition or demeanor is I'm understanding, hey, God has bestowed on you tremendous grace. He's shown you grace. And so from that grace, you want to thank. And you want to thank because, again, of the power of his grace. And so it creates this great cycle. I also realize in my own life, the more I try to figure out how to display grace in my world and grace to others, the more I become thankful. Because the flip of that is when I'm ungracious to others and I'm demanding of others and I have these expectations of others and I want everybody to play by the rules that I want, I become less thankful. I become more resentful, in fact, when I'm asking everybody and expecting everybody to do what I want them to do. So the more I'm just gracious to others, the more I'm thankful in myself because that's, again, the cycle that God establishes. Now, if I want to go a little deeper with this, I go into then how we ended up with this word thankful today, right? That's an English word. And if you kind of go back in time, it comes from an old English word, which is pankful, P-A-N-C-F-U-L, pankful, which I would rather use that word, honestly. I think it could remind me of like my three-year-old grandson. I'm just so pankful for you, you know, just pankful. I'm like, yes, I love that. I want to use that from now on, right? But thankful, here's what's cool about this. It is familiar to us. It means to be satisfied or grateful in some way. But it also meant to be thoughtful or ingenious or clever. Now, you may not make the connection yet, but it's interesting because there's a phonetic connection between thank and think based on this Old English word. Like sing and sang, they're phonetically connected, right? So in the same way, they're connected. And the way this was understood originally when they started talking about being pankful or having panks, which is thanks, is really to be both thoughtful and thankful bolted together, right? So they have this interconnected relationship. They tie a bow one to another. And here's why I think this is important in the discussion for the day. I think in our American society, the way we are engineered to think about thankfulness, we see it as an emotional response to good things, and that's as far as it goes. It's the serendipitous thing. If everything goes right and somebody gives you something great and there's this emotion that wells up because the chemicals in your body are kicking up and they're creating this spring of this feeling of thankful, we go, that's what generates thankful. But when you think about its old usage, both in the Bible and in the way the old English uses it, it's like, no, man, thankful could be an emotional welling up of a thing, but thankful is also related to how you think, your mindset, where you place your vision. In fact, I wrote this as kind of a definition for the day. Thankfulness is the response of satisfaction due to clear thinking combined with grace-filled appreciation for the good things enjoyed and the bad things avoided. Why I find this helpful in my own life is it reminds me that my attitude of gratitude, it starts here. It starts in my thinking, then it moves in my heart, and then it springs out in my words. But there's a cycle in there. There's this connectivity between those three things. Where I've typically in life waited for my heart to feel a thing and then my mouth to verbalize a thing, what I'm beginning to see here is, no, man, I got to do something here first. This will then inform this, which will then generate that, and that's the way it's to be done. And therefore, when that is happening, then I can actually fulfill what the New Testament says, which is be thankful in everything. Everything. See, that's the challenge. It's easy to be thankful in thankful moments. It's tough to be thankful in the hard moments of life. But that's what God expects of us. That's what Jesus challenges us to. Now, again, I want to be really clear. This isn't an easy task at all. Like, I wouldn't say it's easy. Like, I know my own life. I know my own propensity toward negativity, toward seeing the worst in a thing, about worrying about stuff. Like, this is not an easy thing to do. It's easy when life is good, when everything's sailing, when everything is crisp and clear in life. Man, it is tough when life bites. It is hard when life is blah and bland and boring and burdened and busy. And yet, so often, I find when I analyze myself on this, that I typically blame the conditions and the circumstance then. I go, well, I'd be more thankful if everything was working according to plan. And then I realize, because that's my attitude or sometimes my default, I'm sabotaging my potential for thankfulness because I'm wanting everything else to play by rules that I've set up in advance to generate my thankfulness. And when those don't work, then I don't have it, and that's the problem. And I realize it really has to do with the second thing in your notes. It's how we derail thankful. Like, we can do that. I find that I can do that in my own life. Now, let me see if I can help us drill down a little bit more. And we're going to do a little bit of a pop quiz, all right? Just a kind of an A through D option here. But I'm going to ask you, what is the opposite of thankful? That's the question. What is the opposite of thankful? Is it A, Veruca Salt? Right? Remember her from Willy Wonka? I want a pony, Daddy! I want a golden ticket, Daddy! Is that your version of discontent, right? In this, is this what robs us of this thing? What is the opposite of thankful? Maybe it's B, your teenager after you give him $20, right? Maybe that's the opposite of thankful. You're like, here's $20. You're like, all right, see you later. You're like, well, all right. Maybe 50 would have got a thanks out of him. I don't know. How about unthankful? Is that the opposite of thankful? Could be. How about D, discontent? Is discontent the opposite of thankful? See, I'd say of the options, yeah, they're all related to being unthankful, but it's D, that's the problem. That's the problem we face in life. So let me define the differences here. Content. Content is a state of mind which results from satisfaction with the present circumstances, having the desire limited to present enjoyments. I know that seems a little bit cryptic, right? But contentment is saying, you know what, I'm going to make the conscious decision. I'm going to make the conscious decision to be thankful for what is. Not what isn't or what I wish was, but I'm going to decide, you know what, this is what is, and in the midst of what is, I'm going to find the things in there that I can truly be thankful for. I had somebody, I heard them recently give advice to another friend where they were struggling with just tension in their relationship with their partner, and they said, you know what, here's the thing, list 5 positives that you care about and you love in that person. In the midst of this hard thing, find the 5 things that you go, man, I'm thankful for that, because right now, man, I feel the pressure of this relationship, but if you list the 5 things and you lean into that, that's finding contentment even in the midst of a challenging time. In opposite to this is discontentment. Discontent is a state of mind which results from dissatisfaction with present circumstances, having the desire to extend to unfulfilled enjoyments. So again, it doesn't focus on the good things in the midst of challenging things. But it also says, and here's all the things I didn't get that I wished I would have had because it didn't happen. Now I'm doubly bleak. I'm doubly frustrated. See, it's the wishing and the wanting and the envy spirit and the pouting and the, you know, kind of stockpiling all of the counter realities that I wish would have been in play in my life. In fact, we even illustrate this by the notion of the grass is greener elsewhere, right? Discontent is planted on your own lawn, but then just going, it's brown, it's patchy, it's unevenly mowed, there's dog poop right there, like the whole thing, right? And you're like, and theirs is green and lush and perfect and no poop anywhere, and they're just having the best time, right? It's easy to do. Meanwhile, that person's over on their lawn going, it's so brown and patchy. It's not so great. Yours over there is so much better, right? That's the discontentment monster that gets us. And I would advocate that really at the core of this, it's the difference between thankfulness and discontentment. It really just comes down to, again, to this idea of mindset, right? Really, at the core of it all, right? It's not the conditions, it's not the realities that we're in, it's just how we're seeing it. And so if we're going to get to this place of real thankfulness, then we need to set our minds, or I got to set our minds and resolve ourselves to a different way of thinking. And in fact, for me, I realize I see this in David, right? Like when I go through the Psalms, I see this guy doing this thing, right? And honestly, I've got this weird perspective on David. Like the guy was kind of a mess. He slept with a lot of women. He killed a lot of people. He raised a very dysfunctional family. Like, if we modernize the guy, we're like, oh, that guy needs Jesus. I mean, honestly, you kind of feel that, and he does, and he did. But he also loved God, even in his messiness. And there's this time where he's way over his head. And he says, save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck, and I sink deep into the mire where there is no foothold. I've come into deep waters, and the flood sweeps over me. I am weary with my crying out. My throat is parched. My eyes grow dim with waiting for my God. I am afflicted and in pain. Let your salvation, O God, set me on high. Like, his life is awful and miserable, and nothing's going right. And again, when you look at his life, you can see why. The guy set himself up for a lot of suffering, actually. A lot of suffering. But in the midst of all of that, what's he say in verse 30? He says, yet I will praise the name of God with a song. I will magnify him with thanksgiving. See, here's why this is a good reminder for me. In the midst of his bleakness, he finds this place of resolve. Like, I'm going to set my mind in a different space. Yes, this is bad, but I will resist. I will fight this, and I will do this counterintuitive thing. And in the midst of the misery, I will find thanksgiving. I will praise my God. See, I look at that and I go, that's brilliant. I remember way back when I taught the book of Philippians, I talked about this idea that thankfulness is rebellion in a broken world. It's rebellion in a broken world. And I think that's what we have to do sometimes. I think sometimes it's like you end up in the boat of life and you're out there in the storm that's before you and waves are crashing and the clouds are dark and you hear the snap of thunder and everything else. And that's at that moment where you actually have to stand up in the boat and raise your hands, begins to praise, right? Because I think our tendency is just like head down, get through the storm, don't stop to praise, don't stop to think, don't stop to rejoice in God for who he is, even when life is hard. No, we just feel like, no, I just got to head down and get through it and not do that thing, not give that thanks. Now, I believe the reality is that we need to give that thanks. See, anybody can thank when it's good. Not everybody chooses to praise when it's hard. And see, I think the more we focus on when it's bad, all the bad, when we refuse to lean in to the praise and thanking for the good that God has given, and you just focus on the negative things, it's like a black hole that just pulls more of that in, right? Just pulls more of the debris of hurt in. And it's in those spaces I think we need to resist, to reset our minds, to lift our eyes, and then to raise our spirits in praise. Thus, I want to talk about trending toward thankfulness. That's number three in your notes, trending toward thankfulness. And I say trending because I think that's the only word I could come up with. Like, it's like this, I think this journey to being more thankful when things are hard is like up and down, right? But you're ultimately trending up. So it's not like this onward, upward, it's just this perfect climb. No, it's always going to be like that. But we want to be trending in those ways. And I think about Paul on this one, because that's a dude that understood. In fact, a fun fact, if you were to look at every one of Paul's letters, every one of them except one opens with thankfulness. The dude was a thankful dude. The only one that doesn't open with thankfulness is 2 Corinthians. You know how that opens? I want to die. That's what it opens. I'm so discouraged. I'm so depressed. I want to die. That's how it opens. And I love that honesty. Here's the apostle going, you know what? I'm despairing to the point of death. But you know where he finally goes in that letter? Being thankful in the midst of his despairing, and that pulls him out of that hole even. So the dude was all about thankfulness. And so in Colossians, this little letter he writes to a church that he didn't start, didn't plant, probably had never visited up to that point, he wants to encourage them. And so the first thing he says in relationship to what we're talking about today as far as thankfulness, is he first tells them to look up. This is the first thing, especially when life is heavy and hard. You're in the boat, your head is down, the waves are beating, the rain is coming. All of it just feels heavy. The first thing you want to do is look up. He starts in chapter 3, verse 1. If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds. Again, where did I say it starts? It starts here. It doesn't start here. It starts here. Set your minds on the things that are above, not on the things that are of this earth. Right? That is super helpful because, again, I go back to what usually robs me of thankfulness is I have this great vision right here. I'm not looking up. I'm just looking level. I'm looking at the world. And what I realize is that the world and the conditions of life will always conspire against our thankfulness. They just will. They do. I was thinking about it even relating to the holidays. Like, all throughout the holidays, again, we hear about the need to be thankful, the want to be thankful, reasons to be thankful. We're singing it. We're preaching it. We're praising it, whatever else, right? At the same time, during all of that, all of the marketing of Christmas conspires against truly being thankful. It does. It's like, be thankful, and then, oh, but did you have the right gift? Did you have the right trip? Did you have the right Instagram feed? Did you have the right pictures and portrait and family gathering and perfect meal and everything else? And if not, you're depleted, you're sad, you're discouraged. Like, marketing tends to say, you know what, we want you to feel discontent, so you want more, right? And so I think it conspires. It's inevitably going to let us down. So Paul says, man, you got to start by looking up. You got to look at Jesus. You got to look at what he highlighted. You got to look at the way he called you to live. That's the first thing, look up. Next, though, cut out. He says, put to death in verse 5, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desires, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Put them all away, including anger and wrath and malice and slander and obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another. Now, you can look at that list and go, well, that's a list of very obvious and kind of upfront sins. It is. But if you take that whole list and you reduce it down to what it really entails, it's about selfishness. Selfishness. That whole list, you actualize that because you want something for yourself, either defend yourself or provide for yourself, whatever it is. And that's going to be the challenge. When we're me-centered, it's going to rob me of true thankfulness. The other thing is that it is a list of sins. And I'm pretty convinced about the idea of sin in our lives, that what it tends to do is rob. It always promises more than it's going to give. It's like borrowing with interest. You're going to pay at some point in some way. And I think, for me, when I realize that I'm living for myself, I'm trying to get my family to please me, I'm trying to get life to please me, I'm trying to get the church to please me, I'm trying to get the world to please me, I'm trying to, so I can be more this thing, so I can feel the spontaneous, thankful thing, the more I'm doing that, the more I'm working away from the very reality of being thankful. Because nothing is ever going to, again, play by the rules that I set for it to work by. So sin sucks, sin kills thankfulness. It sucks it away. And so the me-centeredness is the problem. So I have to look up, I have to cut out, but then I also have to put something on. And that's where Paul goes into verse 12. Put on then, as much as he said, hey man, look up, and cut out, put on, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, put on compassionate hearts, and kindness and humility and meekness and patience, bearing with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgive each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must forgive, and above all else, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. Now, that's an awesome list. You know what that list requires of us? The opposite of the previous list. The previous list is about self-seeking. This list is about selflessness, right? So the more I'm not putting myself first, my priorities, my agendas, and everything else, I'm not letting that leak in, but I'm putting on a different thing, the more I'm going to be trending in the right direction. He continues in verse 15. He says, and let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and what? Be thankful. So now he starts to get into that theme, right? You've looked up, you've cut out, you've put on, whew, you're in a good space now to really be thankful. Not just in the good, but in all. Then he goes on. He says, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. Second time he brings it up in just a short little window. He's like, man, you got to really engage this. Not just feel it, but you got to do it. You got to lean into the command of it. In fact, I love what H.A. Ironside wrote. He says, we would worry less if we praised more. Thanksgiving is the enemy of discontent. Man, there's some truth to that. But then he drives it home. He says, and whatever you do in word or in deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus. What? Giving thanks to God the Father through him. And then he goes into chapter 4. Continue steadfastly in prayer, being watchful in it with thanksgiving. See, again, I just love this, right? It's this idea of, hey, man, set your mind, purge the junk, and then purpose to practice the things that generate thankfulness, that lean into the command of thankfulness, that produce thankfulness for all the areas of life. See, for me, this is incredibly valuable because I know throughout my life, I've just struggled with this. So you're getting a message that's a little bit more like Matt's personal devotional. You may be going, that guy's got struggles. I get it. But it's like, this helps me. And it helps me because I remember years ago, so it was like my early to mid-30s, I'd been a pastor then for over a decade, and here's a little-known reality sometimes about pastors. We're just as human as everybody, and we have just as much ego in the game as anybody. And so I remember for all that time, I was just feeling discontent. I wasn't thankful about circumstance. I wasn't thankful about the size of the church, the offering that was coming in, whatever it was. Like, this was back in Spokane. I just wasn't thankful, right? Matter of fact, my favorite book is the book of Ecclesiastes, and I think that's why. You know, like, here's a dude that just could see the negativity in life. In fact, he even writes this in chapter 1. Everything is meaningless. And I go, amen, brother. Everything is meaningless, says the teacher. Completely meaningless. What do people get for all of their hard work under the sun? Everything is wearisome beyond description. No matter how much we see, we are never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we are never content. And I could get into chapter 1 and be like, I hear you, man. Right? That's my jam. That was where I was at. And so I was just struggling with all of that. But God gave me a wise wife who knew that I was stuck in Ecclesiastes 1. And so she did this really brilliant thing. She didn't lecture me. She didn't demand anything of me. She didn't just flat out confront me. She gave me this photo that said, the best things in life are right in front of you. And it was interesting because, again, I knew that, I could see that, but I just wasn't living in that, right? I just wasn't living in that. In fact, I had this incredible ability almost to push all the good things to the side and keep looking for the bad, keep looking how things weren't what I wanted them to be. And I think my wife knew that I needed to move from Ecclesiastes 1 to Ecclesiastes 9, where he says, hey, you got to enjoy the little things in life. Eat good food, drink good wine, enjoy the wife of your youth. He goes on to say all the meaningless days of your life, whatever. But, right? But she knew that. And here's what I think my wife really knew and why she gave me this picture. What she knew is if everything turned rosy, if the church became a mega church, if the giving went up 1,000-fold, if everybody just loved every word I said, I would still be discontent. Because my mindset was always pining and wanting. My mindset was on what wasn't, not what was or is before me. I was focused more on my wants and my haves, my desires over my possessions, my fears over my blessings, my problem over my provisions. Basically, I was focused on my idols more than Jesus. And she knew that. And in her wisdom, she reminded me of this. And it was like a jump start. It's like a jump start for my life. Right? Now, I confess, I'm not perfect at this. This is why I say it's trending, right? There's like that kind of thing. But every once in a while, things get tested too. And I can see the progress, right? Like, I still struggle, but I can see the progress. And if I look at the last year, for example, I go, man, it's a tough year. I go back to literally this time last year. It's like, everybody going to lose their jobs? Are we going to be able to finish the building? There's all that stuff. And throughout the year, there's all these things. And you just feel all of that. And in the midst of those pressures, we were getting ready for Christmas. And so I had the task of hanging the stockings. And so I hung our family stockings. And it just reminded me of all the good things are before me, and now they've been multiplied. Right now I have son-in-laws and grandkids, and it's such a difference from even that picture of just my wife and kids, and everything's expanded, and from that it just reminds me, man, there's so many good things right in front of me to be thankful for. And I realize that more and more I'm growing in that. More and more I'm getting good at that. Not perfect, but getting better, right? Getting better. And I think about this then as I close today with some words of Paul again. This time it's in the book of Philippians. And Philippians is a weird letter for him to write because, like, he's in prison. His friends have stabbed him in the back. Like, life is not going great. But he has a reminder, and it starts in verse 4 of chapter 4. He says, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say, rejoice." So it's a command, right? It's a command. He says, "Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand." Then he goes on to say, "Don't be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." And then from this, he says, "The peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." He says, "Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just or pure or lovely or commendable, if there's anything that is excellent or anything worthy of praise, think about those things." Think and thank are connected, right? I want you to think, but how are you going to do it? You got to think about those things. He says, "What you've learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you." Great counsel. But here's the cool thing about this dude, Paul. He applied what he preached. He lived in this space to do that thing. And so in prison, with friends that are just ditching him or just betraying him, this is what he says. He says, "I rejoice in the Lord greatly now at length, and I'm grateful that you have heard and received your concerns about me, for you were indeed concerned for me, but you had an opportunity to be so." He says, "Not that I'm speaking of being in need, for I've learned in whatever situation I am to be content." So he's like, "I'm glad you care about my problems. I'm glad you see I'm hurting, but you know what? I'm good. I'm good," he says. He says, "I know how to be brought low and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. Here's what I realize: I can do all things through him who strengthens me." See, I think about this and I close with this. It's not going to be the next new thing, the novel new thing, the perfect set of conditions, the right person, the right kid, the right job, the right income, the right whatever, that's going to really generate the lasting thankfulness. What I see here is that it's his presence, his person, his provision that does that for us. Let's pray together. Jesus, I thank you. I thank you that you are the source of my thankfulness. And not always. I thank you, though, that you never waver in that. Like if I begin to struggle in that, it's only because I'm pulling back and I'm looking at the surroundings more than I'm looking at you. And so I pray as we come out of this season where from that there may have been unmet expectations, there may have been family squabbles, there may have been who knows what. I pray in all of that we be looking to you as a source of our thankfulness. And so, Jesus, we seek you and we need you and we want to be more like you so that we can then kind of transcend these things. Not that we're thankful for everything that's coming into our life, but we're thankful through everything that's coming into our life. Help us to be like that for you in your good name.